Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting the film series Testigo Witness, Goya in the Movies. Held on select Fridays in May, each film touches upon artist Francisco de Goya's visions of the world, kicking off with Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro on May 10th at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a spring super sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Welcome to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm John Horn in for Larry Mantle this week. Coming up later on the program, a conversation with Moonlight director Barry Jenkins. His new project is the adaptation of Colson Whitehead's The Underground Railroad. But first, let's get to the new releases of the week, and there is a lot to talk about. Joining me now is Claudia Puig, who's president of the LA Film Critics Association, Amy Nicholson, film writer for the New York Times and host of the podcast Unspooled and Zoom, and KPCC critic Andy Klein. Okay, onward and maybe downward. Let's start off with Spiral. It's the new chapter from the horror series Saw. The latest is called Spiral. It stars Chris Rock, Samuel L. Jackson, and Morgan David Jones. Darren Lynn Bousman directs. Amy, Claudia.
All right. Well, it's been 4 years since the last Saw film, and if you were really hungering to see people getting their fingers severed, congratulations. Now there's this jigsaw copycat killer who's attacking the town, and he's making this point of killing crooked police officers. He's trying to kill crooked police officers in a way that he finds befits their crime. So like if you're a police officer who's been getting innocent people convicted by giving false testimony against them, then you are going to have your tongue put into a trap where you either have to yank out your own tongue or get hit by a train. That's the opening scene. And it is very, 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 very gnarly. How does Chris Rock fit into this? Well, he's a detective in the police force, but he's detrusted by his own force because he turned in another officer who shot an innocent man. And you get the sense that if his dad, who is Samuel L. Jackson, wasn't like the chief of police at the time, that like he would have really gotten hurt by his fellow officers. So like he kind of is like aligned with Jigsaw a little bit, and Jigsaw is like sending him clues, acting like they're on the same side, even though Chris Rock's character would kind of disagree. I have to say, like, I watched all of the kills in this movie through my fingers because they are very, very gory, but I really dug the cop part, honestly. I thought Chris Rock was a really fun police officer. He goes on these random riffs about why Forrest Gump is a terrible movie and why like cops can't stay married. And every time he kind of takes over, like I was just happy for Chris Rock to be having fun in this movie, even if I wasn't really having fun watching everybody then get like their limbs torn off.
Claudia?
I generally agree about Rock. I think there's, you know, his humor leavens things, leavens all the grisly aspects. It's a little more plot driven than some of the other Saw movies. And of course, you have Samuel L. Jackson and Max Minghella, who are, you know, no slouches in the acting department either. So, here you have like really good actors in a really mediocre movie, which is like it's the ninth installment in the franchise, but it's kind of more of a reboot than it is a, you know, sequel. My problem with it was, you know, the whole idea when you talk about, you know, meeting out justice against the police department, you can't help but think about, you know, Derek Chauvin and what's been going on. And I wish there had been a little bit more timeliness, I guess. I mean, you don't look to Saw movies for, you know, social justice, but, you know, if you're going to get into police brutality and talk about that, then, you know, maybe don't stop short with that. And in fact, this was made, it was supposed to come out in May 2020. So obviously this was before, or maybe, made obviously before George Floyd. What were you going to say?
Could have been timely, but
yeah,
maybe
could have been timely. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's better than the average Saw movie, but, and it's sort of fun with Chris Rock, but it is grisly. You do watch it through splayed fingers and, you know, there's a line too where someone says he had his foot on the neck of this community for so long. They're talking about a you know, crooked police officer, and again, it just brings you out of the movie, and you can't help but think about Derek Chauvin. So, I don't know. Ultimately, yep. I think it was okay. But
okay.
No bother.
Spiral is co-written by Josh Stolberg and Pete Goldfinger. It's rated R, and it is in wide release. Next, the mystery thriller, The Woman in the Window. It stars Amy Adams and Gary Oldman. The screenplay is by Tracy Letts. based on the novel by the same name by Daniel Mallory, who writes under the pseudonym A.J. Finn. I read the book. It was an okay summer read. Is it an okay summer movie? Andy?
Yeah, it's okay. I'm not going to go much stronger than that. Amy Adams, excellent as always, is playing this traumatized agoraphobic psychologist who lives alone in a big brownstone, no longer living with her husband and daughter for reasons that are murky for a lot of the film. And she starts spying on the new neighbors across the street. Now, you know that they're worth spying on because one of them is Gary Oldman. And if you're a character in a movie and Gary Oldman's character moves in to your neighborhood, you're probably in for a bad ride, right? I mean, the best you can hope for is Winston Churchill, and the second best you can hope for is Sid Vicious. And after that, it's all downhill. So she thinks she sees murder most foul happen in the apartment across the way. But on the other hand, she's also clearly deeply unstable. And so, of course, the police don't believe her. This is a pretty good thriller. It's nicely made by Joe Wright, who directed Atonement and Darkest Hour, and written by Tracy Letts, who wrote the two best William Friedkin films since the 80s, which were Bug and Killer Joe. And he also appears in the film. In this, it's obviously not a remake of the famous Fritz Lang film of the same name, but rather a real spin-off from Rear Window. I mean, this could be called Front Window because she's basically snooping across the street.
Well, even the book, I think, references Hitchcock. I think she's watching Hitchcock on TV. So
yes, and in fact, that's in the film. We see a sequence from Spellbound. Mm-hmm. And there's also the issue that despite the fact that nobody who's not a photographer has real cameras anymore, she manages to pull out a camera with a nice big lens, just like Jimmy Stewart.
Right.
It's got some wit to it. The plot essentially makes sense. It works as a thriller. It is very derivative. I will also mention that Jennifer Jason Leigh was in there, and I didn't even recognize her.
Amy, do you want to jump in, or should we acknowledge our fourth critic? I hear a canine critic in the background.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Two woofs or one woof? But Amy, why don't you go?
Well, I'm glad that dog doesn't know that there's a good cat in this movie as well. In addition to like Julianne Moore showing up in a scene, you've got Brian Tyree Henry. This cast is so terrific that I wish the movie had more sparkle. I mean, when you try to compare it to Rear Window, Rear Window actually has a couple jokes. You're drinking brandy. There's some fun in that movie. There's some joy. This movie is really drained of joy. It's all about like, is Amy Adams being gaslit? And if she is, why and how? And everybody's mean and angry. I think Amy Adams actually does this film really well. She makes an excellent alcoholic, but the best parts of this movie are really just yelling at her and being like, why are you doing this? No, don't do that. What are you guys all doing? I mean, with a cast like this, you really want this movie to just shine, and it does it.
Claudia, any quick thoughts?
Yeah, it has these effective performances and scenes, but I feel like Joe Wright can't seem to choose between making this kind of a melodramatic campy movie or a taut thriller. It feels like a cheap knockoff of Hitchcock. I didn't like it quite as much as I think Andy did. It seems pretty forgettable. It starts off well, goes off the rails, and also Tracy Letts' dialogue felt stagey and more like a play. I understand he's a playwright, but it didn't work for me.
Woman in the Window is directed by Joe Wright. It's available to stream on Netflix, and it's rated R. Next up, Profile is directed by Timur Bekmambetov. Claudia, do you want to tell us about Profile?
Yeah. I was a fan of the movie Searching, which Bekmambetov also produced, although Anish Chaganti directed it. This is that screen life format where the movie is told entirely on computer screens. And, you know, obviously this format, it depends on what your subject matter is for it to really work. It worked with Searching. It works fairly well here. It's kind of like a political catfishing scheme. It's about a woman who, and this is based on a true story, a woman who is a freelance journalist, goes undercover, tries to infiltrate ISIS, and turns out that the guy who's the ISIS recruiter is this kind of handsome, dashing guy who loves cats. So, you know, he's kind of an appealing terrorist, which is weird.
Yeah. But, and the fact that they connect because they both didn't say goodbye to their mom. I mean, come on. It's
a little stretch.
But anyway, keep going.
There are some definite stretches here. However, I will say that Valerie Kane, as a journalist, does a really good job because she melds her two online identities pretty well. You know, you see her put on a hijab and then you see her be herself and all her issues with her friends and her boss or editor. You know, I was compelled, I have to say. I got caught up in it. I think it's a gimmick in many ways. I think it worked better in Searching, less well in Unfriended, but it kind of works in this format and it's pretty compelling.
Amy, what about you? The thing I was most nervous about is that the journalist would click on the wrong tab. She has so many tabs going on her laptop, I thought she was going to do a Jeffrey Toobin and click on the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yep.
But
that's exactly to me why I think these computer screen thrillers really work, because I find them incredibly relatable in the tension about small things. Like, are you going to close your computer window? Is your pet going to disrupt your Skype call, which happens in this? Is somebody going to text you at the wrong time? Like, it's all this stuff that you actually really know and understand and makes you want to freak out and scream. You're not fighting demons. You're like, am I a klutz who like distracts myself and forgets things? Absolutely. And is that maybe going to get this woman killed? Yes. Now, the real journalist who wrote the book that this is based on did say that her terrorist sent her emojis all the time, that he was like seducing her with emojis. And I think the film actually does kind of walk that line of like, it doesn't at all, to be clear, make you want to join ISIS. But it does make you understand a bit of the attraction of like these teenage girls who are connecting with these fighters online, and they want to feel like they're part of something real, and they want this big romance. And she meets a guy who kind of gets that and delivers that to her. And I thought this stuff, it really pulled me in. I was into this film.
Andy, a couple quick thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was very suspenseful, very well done. I actually was a little irritated by the gimmick of it all being a computer screen. It's one of the very first times I had the option of watching it on my big TV, and I stopped and came back and watched it on the computer because it worked better that way. But I'm a big fan of Bek Mumbatov, if I'm saying his name right, for Night Watch and Day Watch, which he did in the early aughts and which I thought were spectacularly good. So here he's not using – he did not deliver what I expect from him usually. But – it is suspenseful.
Okay. Profile stars Valine Kane and Shahzad Latif. It's rated R, and it is in wide release. The Perfect Candidate. It's a film from Saudi Arabia. The Perfect Candidate is directed by Haifa Al-Mansour. She also directed Wajda. Andy, can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah. It's about a young woman doctor who is getting mistreated all the time, essentially getting disrespected because she's a woman in Saudi Arabia. And through an almost farcical series of events, she accidentally signs up to run for the municipal council and then decides to go through with it, launches a really pretty creative campaign for somebody with no resources. And eventually, you know, it is her trying to battle the way in which women are treated in that country. And it's almost has an almost comic tone at times. I wouldn't quite call it a comedy, but it's a very light dramedy.
Claudia, any thoughts?
Yeah, I liked it. Haifa Al-Mansour is very important. She's the first female filmmaker in Saudi Arabia, and she's a very, you know, significant. And this is a message movie about, you know, obviously about the repressive culture and the power of feminism here. I love Wajda. I thought her debut feature was amazing. You know, there's what I loved about this, or what I appreciated about this, was the subtleties that, you know, this is a person who, she's working, she's doing things with small victories. She's generally helping the effort to chip away at male guardianship. And I like that these were, you know, we're used to in American movies, we're used to big changes happening in big dramatic ways. And that's not at all what this is about. It's much more honest and authentic. You see her driving a car, which was only allowed, you know, back in 2018. Up before that, women couldn't drive a car in Saudi Arabia. So you see all these little subtle things that are leading up to hopefully change in this very repressive culture.
Amy, you have 30 seconds. What do you have to say?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, Haifa Al-Mansour, you know, she made her first film in Saudi Arabia, then she left, came here and made Mary Shelley, and then came back. So she's coming back to tell stories about what's happening in Saudi Arabia right now. And that kind of idea of small incremental change, you know, the main thing that this candidate wants to do if she wins is just get a road paved, this idea of politics that work for you. So I found it really relatable. It's not a doom and gloom movie. It's about, like, what can you do? How can you use your influence?
You can find The Perfect Candidate at various Lemley theaters. It's also available on video on demand platforms, including Amazon Prime Video, iTunes, and Google Play. It is unrated. More reviews to come here on Film Week. I'm Sean Horn, in for Larry Mano, with Claudia Puig, Amy Nicholson, and Andy Klein. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm John Horn, in for Larry Mantle. Let's get right back to reviewing the latest releases with our critics, Claudia Puig, Amy Nicholson, and Andy Klein. Next up, Army of the Dead, director Zack Snyder, whose epic cut of Justice League just came out, is back with a new zombie horror film, Army of the Dead. I hope it's shorter than Justice League. Amy, can you start us off on this one?
It is not much shorter. It is 2.5 hours long. However, it is a lot more fun. I've really gotten in the habit of thinking of Zack Snyder as this guy who makes what should be popcorn movies like Storm and Drag and Gloom and all shadows and people stomping around in misery. But he has made a light-footed zombie epic. I suppose you can call it that. I mean, it has to be an epic if it's that long, 2.5 hours. The setup here is that right outside of Vegas, this like super zombie soldier breaks out, gets into Vegas, a huge infection happens, and Vegas is quarantined with a giant wall. And that these people who fought in the Vegas War are kind of these minor league famous warriors now, all working like part-time jobs and trying to scrape by as the city is like in under a giant quarantine and about to be nuclear bombed by the president just to kill all of the zombies all at once. That all happens like before the credits. The real thing that's happening here is that one of the casino bosses hires Dave Bautista, who was a fighter inside of Vegas, to get a crew together and have a heist where they get $200 million from a casino safe before the nuclear bomb goes off the very next day.
I can hear how this is pitched. This is Shaun of the Dead meets Ocean's 11.
Yeah,
exactly. And you've got like casino showgirls who are like new zombie queens of the new zombie society. And, you know, the zombie horde is centered in a casino called the Olympian. So you have this like gladiator vibe with like zombie horses. There's a zombie tiger from Siegfried and Roy.
Is there a zombie Steve Wynn character? Did we go that far?
I wish we should. But the film is, I would say, like not as predictable as you might think. Like it doesn't take a lot of prisoners. There's unexpected kills that happen here. It has a real sense of play. There's no reason why it has to be 2.5 hours, probably because there's a very dumb daughter subplot. But other than that, I was like, I'm in, man. This is like light and fun and absolutely enjoyable.
Andy?
Yeah, as zombie movies go, I really like this one. It sort of takes its cues from Dawn of the Dead, where instead of a shopping mall, you have Las Vegas. And it has a lot of the humor of Return of the Living Dead. It really has a lot of funny stuff in between the scenes of massive shootings and clawings and all sorts of, you know, mayhem going on. I mean, if you don't like mayhem, forget it. But I thought it was quite cleverly done. Yes, it should have been shorter. Unlike Justice League, which was the right length at 4 hours.
I agree. It was four good hours.
Yeah. Well, this was 2.5 hours, of which two hours were good. But it really does move fast, and it doesn't have that uniform monochrome look that you expect from Zack Snyder. I mean, I would not have recognized the cinematography.
No vestiges of 300 in this. Army of the Dead is co-written by Snyder along with Shea Hatton and Joby Harrell. Dave Bautista, Ella Purnell, and Anna De La Reguera star. It's in theaters now. It's also coming to Netflix next Friday, the 21st. Next up, Los Hermanos, The Brothers. It's a music documentary. It looks at the lives of two Cuban-born brothers pursuing musical careers in different countries, one in Cuba and the other here in the United States. Marsha Jarmel and Ken Schneider co-direct the film. Claudia, tell us about Los Hermanos, The Brothers.
I really enjoy this movie. It's a well-made film about these Afro-Cuban virtuoso musicians. They're engaging. They're separated in childhood and they're reunited in adulthood. They come from this very musical family. The father is very well known there as a music educator. The mother was a pianist. The grandfather was a clarinetist. So there was no way they were going to escape being musicians, but you know that they love it. You can, excuse me, you can tell that they love it. Anyone who loves music and is fascinated by Cuba will really appreciate this film. It's gorgeously shot. It also, you know, it tracks their lives. They have stayed in touch. They've had some, you know, when visas and family finances permitted, they were able to get together, but they were never able to play together in before an audience, and they were never able to make records together. So they've always wanted to do that. And their influences are so interesting because they have this sort of Latin Cuban music, but they've been trained as classical musicians. They also have some jazz there. So they just play with so much passion, and the filmmakers wisely really focus on their music. They also have a lot of charisma. And so that all of that, you know, is just is makes it so enjoyable. And there's this, you know, sort of geopolitical thread running underneath it, of course, that, you know, with Obama goes to Cuba, opens things up, and they and Aldo, one of the brothers, actually plays for him along with various other musicians. And, you know, we get then they come when they do come when they do tour the U.S., we sort of see the United States through a foreigner's eyes. They go to Niagara Falls and Las Vegas and San Francisco. Part of Detroit reminds Aldo of Cuba. I kind of thought this would be a great pairing with Buena Vista Social Club.
I was going to say at the Repertory Theater a couple of years from now, Buena Vista Social Club and Los Hermanos sounds like a
exactly.
great double bill.
Exactly. We really get a powerful sense of that culture. And it just works really well. It's the music is beautiful, you know, but it's really a celebration. Yes, there's a little bit of political stuff there. Obama opened things up, Trump closed it down, but it's about the celebration of music and brotherhood.
Los Hermanos, the Brothers is unrated. It's playing at select theaters. You can find it at Lemley's Monica Film Center, as well as Lemley's Virtual Cinema. Next up, Those Who Wish Me Dead. It's an action drama. It stars Angelina Jolie. Taylor Sheridan directs. Amy, why don't you start us on Angie's new movie?
Oh, man. Uh-oh. This is a really well-meaning, predictable, attempting to have a strong emotional hook kind of action movie that just did not work for me at all. Taylor Sheridan, of course, did Hell or High Water. Now he's doing this one where Angelina Jolie is like a forest firefighter who was traumatized because she saw three kids die that she wishes she could have saved. And because she's sort of not trusted and has this death wish that everybody seems to be aware of, she's put alone in this very tall forest station by herself. But no sooner does this happen than there are these hitmen who are trying to take out all these people who are connected to a case, and they're chasing them around. One of the hitmen is played by Nicholas Holt, and they manage to kill pretty much everybody except this one 12-year-old boy who's like on the run in Angelina Jolie's woods, and then they have to team up to try to get this kid away from the hitmen.
Ah, and, you know, so she couldn't save the children before, but maybe she gets a shot at redemption here.
But she'll save this one.
Okay.
You know, like, the emotional
I think I've
just
seen that
not
movie.
Working here for me.
Andy?
I think you have.
Yeah, I mean, this is okay, but it's really dispensable. It did have some plot things that kind of bothered me, like a woman who's 6 months pregnant climbing up, like, what appears to be a 200-foot tower. But, you know, it kind of works, but there's just nothing very special there.
Claudia, any quick thoughts about...
Yeah, that six-month pregnant woman at times looks like she's 9 months pregnant, other times like she's barely pregnant at all. Although I will say her character and John Bernthal, she's played by Medina Senghor, were actually more interesting. They had more palpable chemistry than anybody else in it. But yeah, it was far-fetched. There were all kinds of plot holes. The plot is dribbled out in disjointed drips and drabs.
Many years ago, I spent a night in a fire lookout cabin in the middle of the Idaho wilderness. It was terrifying. That's a different story for a different time, but I'm here alive. Those Who Wish Me Dead is co-written by Taylor Sheridan, along with Charles Levitt and Michael Corita. It's based on the novel by Corita. It's in wide release and on HBO Max. Next, The Killing of Two Lovers. It's a drama from director Robert Machoian. Machoian also wrote the screenplay. Claudia, what do you think about this?
Well, it's really beautiful to look at. It's very painterly. The cinematography is really stunning. There's some long shots. The sky and the rural setting sort of brought to mind Days of Heaven in a way. But then there's also kind of a Blue Valentine feel to it. It's about a marriage that is disintegrating and there are children involved. But it's more about The way in which this is shot, the sound design is really intriguing. There's a lot of ambient sounds like car motors and floorboards thunking and video game noises. It all feels very realistic. It's shot in Utah. It's slow. It's glacially paced, but it didn't bother me particularly. It was pretty unremittingly bleak, but it was incredibly well acted. I actually think this is a showcase for a really talented filmmaker and also some really good acting.
Andy, just like your dog, I know you're chomping at the bit.
Yes,
What do you want to add?
the glacial pacing did get to me. The film does go to an interesting places at the end, which I didn't expect. But boy, I didn't think anything happened for, I marked it down, the first 38 minutes out of an hour and 25 minutes. I was waiting and waiting. Yes, it's painterly and but kind of like watching paint drying.
Okay. Well, that is the drama, The Killing of Two Lovers. It stars Chris Coy, Clayne Crawford, and Ari Graham. It's rated R. It's available to see now at the Landmark, as well as Lemley's NoHo 7 and the Playhouse 7. It'll show at additional Lemley's theaters in the coming weeks. Next up is the Indian film RKRK. It comes from director Rajit Kapoor. He also wrote and stars in the film. Andy, can you quickly tell us about this one?
Yeah, essentially, this is kind of a knockoff of Purple Rose of Cairo. It's very clever. RK, once again, Rajit Kapoor is clearly playing himself. He's a director who is shooting a movie in which he also stars. And they're having trouble with the edit, and one day nobody's watching the monitor, and the main character in the film decides, hey, I'm not going to get killed. And he keeps running where he's supposed to drop dead and runs out of the movie. And they come back and they look at the rushes, and he's not there in any scenes. He has come into the real world, and he eventually moves in with the director, with whom he is obviously identical except for a mustache that helps us distinguish them. And he begins to get fond of life in the real world. I thought it was very cleverly done. It has a lot of emotional resonance that is very different from that in Purple Rose of Cairo. But I thought that I really enjoyed this.
Okay. RKRK is unrated. You can see it in select theaters and at Lemley's Virtual Cinema. Broken Hearts. It's a crime documentary. It tells the tragic story about the lives and deaths of two mothers and their six children. It's also a California story that has gotten a lot of attention. Claudia?
Yeah, I think most people know this very tragic story. These two outwardly likable moms, who adopted six black and brown children, ages 12 to 19. They went off a cliff in Mendocino County. And it seemed like an accident. Obviously, then we find out it was a murder-suicide pact. It's painful to even think about, let alone to watch. And I will say this documentary falls short. There's a podcast by the same name, Broken Hearts, and I started listening to it to see, sort of how much they drew from it. And there's so much more depth and so many more people interviewed. Obviously, there's more opportunity, there's more time involved in a podcast, but I would urge people to listen to the podcast if they're interested in the story rather than watch this documentary because it just doesn't explore enough about who these women were before they adopted all these children. Clearly, one of them was very into social media and posting their perfect life. It was far from perfect. They were abusing the children. One of the things it does sort of introduce, which I appreciated though, was how broken the foster and adoption system can be, and also the biases. This whole white savior idea, and almost colonialism writ large in the way that these women, were able to adopt these six children. Three of there were three set two sets of three siblings, and they were taken away from family members, and people just thought, oh, these lovely women and white women and willing to adopt these brown and black children. It just they it's really infuriating from that aspect, but everything is very grim and very dark, and I would have wanted to know a little bit more, and also maybe honoring the children's memory a little bit more. Oh, that was kind of all left vague.
Broken Hearts is directed by Gregory Palmer. It's unrated and available to stream on Discovery Plus. Let's squeeze one more in. Georgetown. Christopher Waltz makes his feature directorial debut with the next film. He also stars in it. It also stars Vanessa Redgrave and Annette Bening. Andy.
Yeah, this is based on a real murder case, and it was a story in The New Yorker called The Worst Marriage in Georgetown, which is certainly apt. For the first 10 minutes of the film, we don't know whether the 91-year-old character played by Vanessa Redgrave, whether Christoph Waltz is her servant, her assistant. We finally find out he's her husband, even though he's supposed to be 44 years younger. In real life, he was 44 years younger. In this case, they had to sort of fudge with the ages in order to accommodate the casting. But she gets murdered early on, and the question is, did he do it? Everybody else thinks he does it. And the more we learn about him in a series of flashbacks, the more we realize that he is not the most reliable narrator in the world. That he is, in fact, quite the hustler. And the question is he a murderer as well as just being a, dare I say it, BS artist?
Hmm. Sounds intriguing. Amy, you have 10 seconds. What do you think?
Well, it's silly, but I will say watching Vanessa Redgrave get wooed by a younger man, by Christoph Waltz, when he's laying on the charm is nice. It is a film about a guy with too much ego who thinks he alone can save the Mideast crisis. Do with that what you will. That's happened.
Georgetown is rated R. We'll be back with more reviews right after this break. Welcome back to Film Week. I'm John Horn in for Larry Mantle. We were talking about the film Georgetown before the break. We heard Andy and very quickly Amy's thoughts. Claudia, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I found it moderately entertaining. It was kind of half-baked. It's basically a really interesting story, that Worst Marriage in Georgetown. It kind of felt like Reversal of Fortune a little bit. But it started off well, and then I think eventually it got less suspenseful and kind of tedious. And poor Annette Bening was really wasted. She just sat in a courtroom most of the time. In the very beginning, you think she's, you know, it's going to be a fight between her and Christoph Waltz, which would be great to see those two, you know, acting powerhouses together. But then they just don't give her much to do.
So not quite as good as The Staircase, if you know that series. You can see Georgetown at Lemley's Town Center 5 in Encino, as well as other select theaters. Check your listings. It's also coming to all major video on demand platforms in a few days on May 18th. Writers of Justice. Mads Mikkelsen, who is the star of the Oscar-winning international film, not foreign language anymore, Another Round, is back in action in the new European drama Writers of Justice. Amy.
Mads Mikkelsen, yes. Well, nothing says I am now everybody's new favorite actor than doing your own version of Taken, just like Liam Neeson did right ahead of you. However, this is a really interesting inversion, I would say, of Taken, done in like that kind of deadpan Danish style, where they're bringing in a bit of ethics and morality here. The setup is that Mads Mikkelsen has been this like soldier in the Middle East who is not really fit to come back home. And like his wife and teenage daughter are almost just accepting that they'll never see him again because he's just so used to being going on murderous rampages. And then right at the very beginning, his wife is killed in this train accident where two trains collide. And one of the survivors of the train accident happens to be a science nerd statistician who is like, I don't think this was an accident. I think that this actual like biker gang was behind this because one of the people who died was supposed to testify in court against this head biker guy. And so they go to Mads Mikkelsen when he gets home to take care of his daughter. And they're like, we think we know who's guilty. If we can do all the science and figure out who to point the finger at, can you just go kill them? And he does. And they witness all these killings and they're like, oh my goodness, what's happening? It's done in that kind of sense of humor where you're chuckling at the awkwardness of it. Like, his teenage daughter, who is now estranged from him, is dating this like yogi anti-violence kid with blue hair who's very emotionally advanced and is trying to get Mads Mikkelsen to deal with his own grief. And the film, you know, what starts off just seeming like kind of a strange little lark making fun of the Taken movies gets really into questions about like, what are the repercussions of your actions? Like, what is the limit of like revenge and blaming people for things that happen? And like, what are the centillion reasons why you could go on a rampage and maybe why you shouldn't? And that part, I think it's really smart. This is a really enjoyable film.
Well, there's a reason why Scandinavian crime is good as a work of literature, because it raises those questions. I mean, even if like books like Joe Nesbo's are incredibly violent, they are not dealing in a moral vacuum and they look at those issues. So maybe this is, you know, could be better than the all of the Stieg Larsson films, but who knows? Riders of Justice is written and directed by Anders Thomas Jensen. It's showing in select theaters. Next up, Takeout Girl. It's a dramatic thriller. It follows a 20-year-old delivery driver who begins hustling drugs as she tries to keep her family's restaurant afloat. It's directed by Hisoni Johnson, who also co-wrote it with the film's protagonist, Hedy Wong. Claudia, this is set in L.A. So what do you think of it?
It's set in South Central in an area called Low Bottoms. I appreciated certain aspects of it. It's intermittently intriguing. I like that it was this kind of gritty indie thriller. Could use a little bit more polish, but I also think that the lead actress, who is also the co-writer, Hedy Wong, is a talent to be watching. Hisoni Johnson, the director as well. He's also the co-writer. I thought the mother, played by Lena Yi, is excellent. It's about this, the mother has a Chinese restaurant and it's struggling. And so her daughter, Tara, played by Hedy Wong, delivers the food, and she stumbles on some major drug dealer makers. And so she ends up, working with them in sort of a Breaking Bad-ish sort of way, except she's taking takeout food to people and then not really taking the takeout food, she's taking the drugs. So it's an interesting concept. I appreciate how it captured LA's diversity and multiculturalism, particularly in South Central. I thought it was pretty well acted. It was a middling movie with, I think, some potential, definitely, on the part of the filmmakers and the actors.
Amy, what are your thoughts?
I might jump in and say the meaner stuff that I feel like Claudia doesn't quite want to say. I thought this film was just sort of glowery nonsense that was trying to pass itself off as like a slice of life, but I didn't really buy it. I didn't really buy that like this film knew what it was talking about like life in LA, about the people in LA. You know, like the lead character just sort of glowers through the movie and doesn't seem to have like that much of a sense of inner life. Like I hate to say, I didn't really like her or care about her. And it has these melodramatic things like her mother who owns the restaurant. Basically every scene at the beginning, she's like getting hurt here and here. And I was like, is she going to keep losing fingers until at the end of the movie? Like there's no mother left and she's still trying to run the restaurant. Like, you know, when you start introducing like the members of the people who they say are in gangs in this movie, honestly, the costuming looked like such a 90s stereotype that I just felt like this movie has no idea what it's talking about. And it felt like it lost a lot of credibility.
Claudia, it sounds like you and Amy watch different movies.
Well, I was being a little bit kinder, but I do understand some of those issues too. So the mom was constantly sick and constantly like, just get her to a doctor, and there were trying to do. But.
So if you want a film to argue over, take a friend, watch this, and then argue over it like you and Amy have done, and maybe you're in good shape. Takeout Girl stars Hedy Wong, Ski Car, and Lena Yi. The film releases on video on demand platforms on May 18th, where you can find it on iTunes, Fandango Now, Vudu, and Google Play, and more. It is unrated. And last, and maybe least, but we'll find out, Weekenders. It's a romantic drama from director Eric Blomquist, who co-wrote the film with Carson Blomquist, I assume they're related, and Peyton Michelle Edwards. Andy, you have plenty of time to tell us what you think about this one. It doesn't have to be short. Go on.
Okay. I thought it was sweet. It's very thin. The hook is that this young woman rents an Airbnb, but there was a mess up with the reservations, and so the son of the people who own the house also shows up thinking he's supposed to spend the weekend. She's supposed to be there with her boyfriend, but he's bailed. So suddenly you have this young woman and this young guy who is geeky and self-conscious, a Dartmouth grad. So geeky and self-conscious, like all Dartmouth people, and and have I offended? And you know that they're going to have some kind of spark between them. Things are developing in a kind of platonic way, and then her horrible boyfriend shows up as well, unexpectedly. He wasn't supposed to come, and somehow the geeky guy meets somebody online who shows up, and so you have the four of them there, and the sexual tension is very high. It's cute. I would call it more a comedy than a drama. And the acting is nice, but it is very thin. It's all of 76 minutes long. If you want something that just passes the time and is quite pleasant, well, sure.
If you got 76 minutes to kill, this can kill it, although there might be, go read a book. Weekenders is available on video on demand platforms, including iTunes, Apple TV, Amazon, Google Play, and Fandango now, and also cable on demand. I want to ask all of you one question. I've seen some of these films. Profile, to me, looks like a movie that was shot during the pandemic. It's very rarely are there a character with another actor. And a lot of the movies that are coming out now are clearly either shot or went through post-production during the pandemic. Are you starting to see movies that clearly only have a couple of actors in a scene because they couldn't shoot them any other way outside of Profile?
Well, you know what really stunned me, actually, is Army of the Dead, that giant zombie movie. Actually, as the pandemic was going on, one of the actors in that film who played the helicopter pilot was canceled for sending sexy texts to underage girls. They replaced his entire character during the pandemic with Tig Notaro, who did the whole thing in CGI. And I have to say, I could not tell they reshot a character in a giant film like this during the pandemic.
Wow, amazing what you can do with a computer. My thanks to our critics, Amy Nicholson, Andy Klein, and Claudia Puig. Coming up, I talk with my friend Barry Jenkins about his new directing role with the limited series The Underground Railroad. Stick around for that.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.